25. Growing up, the Lynch family hadn't talked about the dreaming. It seemed unfathomable now that their entire livelihood had been based upon dreams, that two-fifths of them had been dreams, that two-fifths of them had been dreamers, and yet they did not talk about it. Neil Lynch sold dreams on the black market, and Declan took calls from buyers for dreams, and yet they did not talk about it. Aurora was a dream, and Neil had always known that if something happened to him, the children would immediately become orphans of a sleeping mother, and yet they did not talk about it. Ronan accidentally dreamt a brother into being and had to teach himself how to prevent it from happening again, and yet they did not talk about it. Ronan had thought there was no one else like him in the world, and it had nearly killed him, and yet they did not talk about it. Looking back now, Ronan tried again and again to understand it from Neil and Aurora's point of view. Perhaps they thought the children would be less likely to betray the secret if they didn't have words for it. Perhaps they thought Ronan might grow out of the dreaming if he didn't pay attention to it. Perhaps they had lost trust in humans so thoroughly that they numbered their sons among the untrustworthy. He didn't remember the first time he'd dreamt something into being. He didn't remember dreaming Matthew. He did remember, however, one of the only times they talked about his dreaming. Ronan had been young. He didn't remember if Matthew existed yet. Memories were like dreams that way. They skipped the parts that weren't interesting to them at the time. He had been playing in the back fields at the barns, the deep sloping pasture that now contained the pond he and Adam had dug. He was young enough that he wasn't allowed out alone, so Aurora had been there with him, reading a book under the shade of a tree, laughing to herself every so often. How idyllic it must have been, he thought now, young Ronan tumbling through the waist-high grass. Beautiful Aurora sprawled in one of her light tresses in the grass, hair golden as Matthew's or Bride's, a book in one hand, the other finding grapes out of the basket she'd brought with them. Overhead, the clouds in the summer blue had been as inviting and drowsy as an afternoon comforter. Ronan had fallen asleep. He did not remember this. He only remembered the waking. He remembered waking in the grass and being unable to move. Not his legs asleep, but all of him. His mind looking down at his body sprawled in the grass near his beautiful sweet mother. And then the memory skipped to him plucking something from the grass to show to Aurora. It was a book, like the one she'd been reading, but much smaller, sized for his child palms. "What do we have here?" she asked him, putting hers away. "Open it." Aurora let the tiny volume fall open. Inside there were not pages, but a summer sky graced with towering white clouds. She poked her fingers into the book and watched the clouds part around them. The sky was in the book, but it was also over the book, a page and a sky, two-dimensional and three-dimensional at once as it towered upward. "Look at you, Mr. Impossible," Aurora whispered fondly. She opened and closed it several times to see if the sky would change. It did. From day to night to day again, sun to stars to sun. "Now, let's bury it." "Bury it," echoed Ronan. He wanted to show it to Declan, to Neil. He wanted to put it on his shelf. Aurora stood up and brushed the grass off her skirt. "Little things like this are best as secrets. It's very important to remember that." It didn't feel important to remember that. It felt important to show it to someone. Ronan tried to understand. "For how long?" She kissed the top of his head. "Forever." "Forever?"
"This seems like a really nice place," Hennessy said. "Are we here to destroy it?"
Burrito had just driven past acres of dried, unharvested cornfields to arrive at a house old enough to have a name on a brick pillar by the drive, Barn Hill. The cornfields went right up to a neat little yard, and then there was the square white house, and beyond that was dried marsh grass, and then presumably were marshes and eventually the sea. The entire property had a haunted, lonely loveliness. One would not find it by accident. Ronan agreed with Hennessy. It did seem like a really nice place. It reminded him of the barns, and he did not want to destroy it. Bride didn't answer, just gazed at the house as they pulled the invisible car up to the separate garage. He had not been quite the same since the server farm, although Ronan couldn't put his finger on what had changed. He wanted to say that it was something like an additional gravity, an investment in the task, but no one had ever been as invested in this as Bride. He seemed withdrawn from them, introspective. It was, Ronan thought, as if he were angry or disappointed with Ronan or Hennessy, although he couldn't think of what they might have done to vex him.
"Get your things," he said finally, already opening his door. "No, not just your sword, your bags."
"We're staying here?" Ronan asked in surprise. The lights were on inside the house, and it had a decidedly lived-in look to it, not Bride's style, not his style at all.
"If we're murdering people and taking their house," Hennessy said, "can I eat first? Actually, I guess I could eat them. I'm hungry enough to eat a baby. Are there going to be babies?"
But Bride was already off and nearly to the porch of the house, even more disinterested in her banter than he had been at the beginning of all this. With a growl, Ronan shouldered his bag and the scabbard with vexed to nightmare and followed after. By the time Hennessy climbed the two steps to the front door to join them, they could already hear footsteps from inside the house, lots of them. Ronan and Hennessy exchanged a look behind Bride's back. She looked as bemused as he did. Then the door opened and a short woman with light brown skin and dark brown hair clipped back from her face stood there. Even though her appearance had little in common with Hennessy's, she nonetheless reminded Ronan of what Hennessy had looked like when he first met her, exhausted and frightened. Just like Hennessy, she hid the exhaustion and fright away beneath a very different expression, but it still leaked out around the eyes, the tight smile. When she saw them, a little bit of the exhaustion and fright went away, replaced with curiosity and wariness. Good, thought Ronan. That was the correct response to the three of them showing up on one's doorway. She looked Bride up and down, and then she looked over her shoulder.
Is this him?
Behind her, several voices rose in a chorus of youthful excitement.
He's here! Is it him? I said he was here. I said that already. It's Bride. What about Jordan Hennessy? Yes, I see her. I see her. And Ronan Lynch? He's tall and bald. He has the sword.
The children had rushed up behind their mother like a wave blustering to shore, stopping just short of breaking out onto the porch. Five happy faces in five different heights. They hissed and poked at each other and pointed at Hennessy and Ronan standing behind Bride. Ronan and Hennessy exchanged another look. This was not what Ronan would have considered the correct response to the three of them showing up on one's doorway. But he kind of liked it.
You might as well come in so they can paw at you, said the woman. Not that you're here for me, but I'm
Angelica, Bride said as he stepped past her into the cramped hallway. Angelica Aldana Leon. Yes, I know. They told me. As her mouth dropped open, he lifted a closed fist and said to the five children, Presents, but not until you tell me what they are.
Are they the seeds? Are you real? He said not to ask that.
Bride opened his closed hand and let a single seed drop from it into each of their palms. Now, how do you make them grow? They conferred like it was a game show. Then one whispered the answer to the other, and together they clapped the seeds in their hands. Each immediately exploded into a bright blue lily, and just then Ronan realized, stupidly, that they were all dreamers, each of these children, and Bride must have come to them in their dreams, too, and shown them these dreamt seeds he was going to give them. Ronan searched inside himself for the same jealousy he'd first felt over Rhiannon, but that wasn't what he felt at all.
The children told me that it's you who have stopped the...
Angelica asked them, making a gesture to her eyes and nose. The night wash.
The slop, shouted one of the boys. Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know how to thank you for what you're doing, so just thank you. You have saved them, Angelica said with feeling.
You're welcome, Bright said. I don't know how long it will hold, but we will keep working.
Ronan stared at the kids, who stared back up at him. Now he understood why Angelica looked frightened and exhausted. Dreamers. Little dreamers, like he had been once, but growing up in a world where a lack of lay energy was killing them. He wondered how many dreamers had died of the night wash without knowing anyone else like them existed, or knowing that they could save themselves by moving to a place with more energy. This was why they were doing what they were doing. He looked down. One of the kids had his hand and was shaking it, trying to get him to follow. Another was giggling furiously as Chainsaw sat on her shoulder, working hard to be extraordinarily gentle with her talents. Same, Chainsaw, he thought. A third hugged his leg, and without thinking, he draped a hand over her head, his unconscious remembering both Matthew and Opal. He had forgotten what it was like to hug and be hugged during these last few weeks. It felt like ages since these small comforts. Angelica said something in brisk Spanish, and the children began to argue noisily among themselves. In English, she told them, "The children will show you where you can put your things. I'm sorry. It is bunk beds for you two boys. We don't have much room."
"That's all right," Bride said. "It will be nice to have a shower and a meal for a night."
Hennessy was whisked away, and Bride and Ronan left in a bedroom with the promised bunk beds. There was nothing fancy about the beds. They were just raw wood screwed together with a can-do attitude and mismatched blankets. But the entire situation was homier than any place they had stayed since leaving. Bride didn't seem to care. No sooner had he silently set his bag on the lower bunk than he turned to go.
"Wait a second," Ronan said. "Wait a damn second."
Bride paused, and Ronan nearly lost his nerve. He hadn't expected Bride to listen.
"What did we do?" Ronan asked.
Narrowing his eyes, Bride shook his head a little.
Ronan pressed on. "Haven't we been trying? What more do you want from us? We go where you tell us to go. We do what you tell us to do. You asked me to listen, and I listened. What did I do? What did I fuck up?"
Bride's expression changed.
"I'm not angry with you. Is that what you think?"
"I don't know what to think."
"I don't either," Bride said. "Why does Adam keep trying to find you in the dreams these past few days?"
"Tam Guam."
"And why," Bride went on,
"are you keeping him out?"
Ronan felt his face go hot, his hands go cold. He hadn't thought Bride would notice.
"You don't know him. He can't put things down. He's thorough. He cares. The fact he found a way to look for me in dream space as soon as we started getting more energy out there just proves it. If I let him meet up with me in dream space, he won't stop researching the moderators and all of this stuff until he's solved it. I'm not going to be the one who gets him kicked out of Harvard."
"For his own good," Bride said,
but not as if he believed or disbelieved, just as if he was anticipating the rest of Ronan's sentence. Then he looked away, and as he did, he had that same expression that had made Ronan think he was upset with them. His eyebrows set, eyes tight, mouth tight. Not as effortless as the Bride they'd met all the weeks ago. In a low voice, he said almost to himself, "No, I'm not angry at you. You have done everything I've hoped. You and Hennessy are much different than I expected. Better than I expected." Ronan's mouth opened and closed. It was such the opposite of what he was expecting to hear that he didn't have any words at all.
"No, I am not angry at you," Bride continued. "I'm tired. I'm proud. I'm confused. I'm sad, because I know things can't stay like they are now. We are working even now to change things, and it will never be like this moment again. It is a ridiculous way to think,
to be more interested in the present than the future, and if it were you or Hennessy, I would never permit it. I won't lose my way. I know that, but I can imagine it. It is me. It is me I am angry with. It meant more to Ronan than he thought to hear all these words, even if he didn't entirely understand them. We are nearly to the final step, Bride said. There is only the dam left. Then it will be a different game, entirely. Why are we here, then? Ronan asked, and Bride's mouth turned rueful, which made Ronan think he had been expecting Ronan to ask something else, although he couldn't imagine what that something else might be. This is just a reward. This is just so you can see why we're doing it, and sleep a night on a real pillow, and bask in the gratitude of one of the many voices who have your names on their lips these days. You're a hero. Enjoy it.
A hero? It was an unfamiliar concept. Ronan had been the villain for so long, if he had been anything. The one in trouble, the one written up on the slip, the one being chased, the one being accused. And before that, he had been the young dreamer. Secret. Forever. Now he was a hero to a family of young dreamers who would never have to feel alone. Both Bride and Ronan jumped as they heard a trilling sound. It was Ronan's dreamt phone. He had nearly forgotten he still had it. He hadn't used it since that first call to Declan. And it was Declan now. There was no way to identify the caller visually, of course, since the dreamt phone just looked like a tunnel piercing, but nevertheless, something about the ring strongly implied that it was Declan. It was a jarring interruption. Declan belonged to another world, a different timeline, but with a glance at Bride, Ronan tapped his finger against his ear to answer it. Declo?
Good, it worked,
Ronan said. How did you do it?
I had to get back the car I was in when you called before and find your call and the previous calls and its log. I couldn't type in that gibberish, of course, that showed up as your number, but I could just ask it to return your call.
Wait, what car were you in before?
Declan didn't bother answering this.
I want you to come to Mass this weekend.
It took Ronan a moment to parse the request. It was a quite ordinary one, one Declan had made countless times over the past several years, resulting in Ronan rolling his eyes and leaving very early in the morning in order to make it to 11 o'clock Mass with his brothers on the other side of the state. Now it felt like someone else's memories. A dream. It occurred to Ronan that something bad might have happened.
What's going on? Is Matthew okay?
Family meeting, Declan said, a Declanism that never failed to rankle.
Family meeting meant Declan shaking his finger at one of the other Lynch brothers.
About what?
About the future.
Are you fucking serious about Mass? That's in 2 days.
I have faith in you.
A lot of people are on our tail.
You tell us the church, the location, we'll be there.
Bride was waiting, eyebrow raised. My brothers want to see me, Ronan told him. It was making his pulse jack up for some reason, the thought of it or the thought of telling Bride about it. He couldn't tell which. This weekend.
Declan asked, who are you talking to? Is that Bride?
We have a date with Illadora, Bride said in a low voice.
I have to think about it, Ronan told the phone. I'm not close to Boston.
What's important to you? Declan asked. I wouldn't be asking if it wasn't important.
Bride was still looking with his same expectant expression, hand on the doorknob to go to the dreamers they'd come to see.
I have to go, Ronan said. I'll call you back. He hung up.
He thought he grasped what Bride had just been talking about before the call, because he too felt somewhat torn between the possibility of seeing his brothers again for a few minutes and a knowledge that the dreamers were nearly to the end of the first part of this endeavor, and whatever would change once the final obstacle to Illidorn's line was removed.
I won't tell you what to do, Bride said, but I need to go on after this. I can't stop this close to the end.
I know, Ronan replied. It was complicated to be a hero.